can get me there at IamNikkiStrong. I am Nikki Strong, and this is VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Anna Mateo and Alice Bryant. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, scientists at the University of Oxford say their experimental COVID-19 vaccine shows a strong immune response among older people. The early results raise hopes that the vaccine can protect the people most at risk of getting severely ill from the new coronavirus. Dr. Andrew Pollard leads the University of Oxford study. He told the British Broadcasting Corporation on Thursday that he was delighted that early results show a strong immune response even in those over 70 years of age. Dr. Maheshi Ramasamy of the Oxford Vaccine Group added that the next step will be to see if the immune response means protection from the disease itself. The results came from a Phase 2 study of 560 volunteers, including 240 people aged 70 or older. One group of the volunteers was given two treatments of the vaccine, called ChAdOx-1. The other group was given a placebo, a shot with an inactive substance. Findings from the study were published Thursday in the medical paper The Lancet for scientific review. The Oxford vaccine uses a harmless weakened adenovirus to carry genetic material from the new coronavirus into the body. The human cells will then create proteins to develop antibodies against the coronavirus. These so-called adenovirus vector vaccines are not known to cause any serious health concerns. Working with drug maker AstraZeneca, Oxford is currently carrying out its Phase 3 study. The study includes 60,000 volunteers from Britain, the United States, Russia, and Brazil, among other countries. The Oxford study was briefly suspended in September because of an unexplained illness in a volunteer. Pollard said he expects to release all data from the Phase 3 study by late December. Earlier this week, two American drug makers announced that their separate COVID-19 vaccine candidates were 95% effective against the disease. The companies, Moderna and Pfizer, have said they will seek emergency use authorization for their vaccines from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. Pfizer developed its vaccine with German partner BioNTech. Moderna and Pfizer have not yet published results from their studies in medical papers for review. Pollard said there was no competition with other vaccines. He said, "We will need all of them to protect people around the globe."
On the roof of an apartment building, In one of Gaza's most crowded cities, live some unusual occupants, two baby lions. The babies, or cubs, walk among the water tanks and eat chicken for food. Children play with the animals, and some take selfies with them. One is male, the other female. The lion cubs have become pets for a 27-year-old bakery owner, Nassim Abu Jamia. They have become popular playthings for many people in the neighborhood. And this has animal welfare experts concerned. However, as children in his family and from the neighborhood played with the animals, Abu Jamia dismissed the risks. "When you raise them as babies," he said, "a harmony will grow between both of you." This harmony, he added, would keep the lions from hurting him and others. Abu Jamia said he got the cubs from a local zoo, but would not give more details. He did, however, share a dream of his. "It is my hobby. I was attached to them, and I love to have them," he told Reuters. He said he hopes one day to have his own zoo. One animal doctor, Amir Khalil, has a different opinion. He has led several trips to Gaza with the animal welfare organization Four Paws to rescue mistreated zoo animals. Khalil said he was concerned to hear about the cubs. "I advise the Gaza authorities to take away those lions," he told Reuters by phone from Pakistan. "At the age of 6 months, a lion becomes more dangerous as his size gets bigger and his muscles become stronger." Khalil also fears for the cubs' own welfare. The doctor said lions raised in a home may not get the food and medical care they need. This could result in long-term health problems, especially difficulties with muscles, joints, and bones. During the coronavirus pandemic, zoos in Gaza have experienced a drop in the number of visitors. Without paying visitors, they are struggling to feed and care for the animals. Hassan Azam is an official with Gaza's agriculture ministry. When asked about the lion cubs, he said the ministry does not know about any public objections to the animals. But he said the ministry would investigate. "Palestine law does not permit raising wild animals in people's homes," he told Reuters. "Wild animals must be kept in proper zoo houses." Back at the apartment building, the neighbors seemed untroubled to be living so close to a wild animal. "I am not afraid," said one neighbor. "On the contrary, we are proud that we have lions in our area." I'm Ana Mateo.
Have you ever been unsure about when to use if and when to use whether? If so, you are not alone. There is a reason these words can be tricky. They are sometimes interchangeable. In some cases, either word can be used with no difference in meaning. For instance, you can say, "I don't know whether she left yet," or "I don't know if she left yet." However, in other cases, if and whether have different meanings or uses. You have to choose one or the other. Both if and whether are conjunctions, words that connect two or more sentences or clauses. And a lot is involved in their grammar. So I will cover this subject in two programs. Today's program centers on when you must use whether and cannot use if. The word whether signals that there are only two possibilities. Keep that in mind throughout today's program. Let's start with infinitive verbs. Before infinitives, use only the word whether, not the word if. An infinitive is the most basic form of a verb. In American English, the infinitive means to plus verb. To share and to get are some examples. Listen to a sentence that contains the word whether followed by an infinitive verb.
My son got his favorite candy on Halloween. He cannot decide whether to share some with his friends.
The infinitive verb after whether here is to share. Again, do not use if before infinitives. For example, do not say, he cannot decide if to share some with his friends. Here is another example. Listen for the infinitive verb after whether.
I am wondering whether to get a book or magazine to read.
The infinitive following whether here is to get. Next, let's talk about prepositions. After prepositions, use the word whether. Common prepositions before whether include about and in. In this next example, pay attention for whether and the preposition that comes before it.
Can we talk about whether you are coming for the holiday?
Here, the preposition about comes before whether. Again, do not use if after a preposition. For instance, avoid saying, can we talk about if you are coming for the holiday? Here is another example. Listen for the preposition and the word whether, which follows it.
Teachers are very interested in whether schools will reopen soon.
Here, the preposition in comes before whether. Because of this, the word if cannot be used. Next, let's move to the phrase or not. We use whether, not if, directly before the words or not. In other words, the phrase whether or not is correct. The phrase if or not is incorrect. Listen to an example to see what I mean. Take note that the word whether is immediately followed by or not.
I called to find out whether or not you are okay.
Note that use of or not is not required and does not affect meaning. It is also possible to put those words at the end of the sentence. Here is an example.
I called to find out whether you are okay or not.
Just remember that the words or not are unneeded and do not change the meaning. However, there is one exception to that. In some situations, whether or not can mean regardless of whether. For this meaning, you must include the words or not. Listen to an example of how it is used.
Cassie is my friend, whether Sam likes it or not.
This means that the speaker is not considering Sam's opinion on the friendship. And finally, we use only the word whether, not if, when it introduces a noun clause that is also the sentence subject. Here is an example.
Whether he wins is not my concern.
The noun clause in this sentence is whether he wins, and it is the subject of the sentence. We would not say, if he wins is not my concern. The word if does not begin sentence subjects. When if begins a sentence, it introduces a conditional and is not part of the subject. That's our program for this week. Join us again soon for part two. We will talk about when if must be used, and when whether and if are interchangeable. I will also show you an easy way to remember which one to choose. I'm Alice Bryant.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. In 1863, Union forces defeated Confederate forces in the bloodiest battle of the American Civil War, the Battle of Gettysburg. Soon after that, the Union won another important victory, seizing Vicksburg, Mississippi. Kay Gallant and Harry Monroe continue our story of the Civil War with the Battle of Vicksburg.
In November 1863, President Lincoln traveled to Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. He spoke at the opening of a military cemetery. He felt very tired by the time he got back to Washington. Doctors thought he had a cold. Later, they said he had a weak form of smallpox. The president remained in bed. Few visitors could see him. There was a danger the smallpox could spread. Lincoln got better after a few weeks. He began working on his yearly message to Congress. After 2.5 years of war, he had good news to report. Union armies had gained 2 important victories at about the same time.
One was the Battle of Gettysburg. Union forces, led by General George Meade, had defeated Confederate forces, led by General Robert E. Lee. They pushed Lee back into Virginia. It was the last Confederate invasion of the North. The day after the Battle of Gettysburg, Union forces defeated Confederate forces at Vicksburg, Mississippi. This victory gave them control of the Mississippi River, and it split the states of the Confederacy.
Union General Ulysses Grant had been trying to seize Vicksburg for several months. It was not easy. Vicksburg lay on the east side of the Mississippi River. It was built high above the water on a rocky cliff. As the river flowed past Vicksburg, it turned in sharply at the base of the cliff and then continued on to the Gulf of Mexico. The Confederates had placed cannon all along the sharp turn in the river. Enemy boats sailing past made easy targets.
General Grant began the campaign for Vicksburg in late 1862. His army was west of the Mississippi River. He needed to get to the other side to attack the city. First, Grant planned to cross the river into northern Mississippi State. Then he would march south to Vicksburg. He crossed the river, but Confederate forces destroyed his transportation and supply lines. He withdrew. Early in 1863, he tried again.
This time, he planned to sail his men past Vicksburg. They would cross the river a little downstream, turn, and attack. Grant moved 40,000 men to a point 10 kilometers from Vicksburg. He told the men to put down their guns and take up digging tools. They would build a canal to carry them past the turn in the river, past the Confederate cannon.
For weeks, the Union soldiers worked on the canal. They dug through mud and wet clay. Many died of disease. After more than a month of digging, engineers decided that the canal would not work. Grant ordered the men to build another canal. Then another. They did not work either. By this time, the Union soldiers had become experts at digging canals. One of them said, "As soon as the canals at Vicksburg are finished, we are going to cut a canal across the upper part of Florida. We will cut that state off from the Confederacy and give it to the alligators."
Finally, in April 1863, Grant gave up all ideas of getting past Vicksburg without a fight. He decided to march most of his men down the west side of the river to a steamboat landing 30 kilometers below Vicksburg. He would send his Navy boats past the city at night and hope for the best. It took 3 weeks for Grant's men to reach the steamboat landing. The roads were very rough. In many places, they were covered with water. Engineers had to cut trees and cover the muddy roads with logs so wagons would not sink. They had to build bridges over the many streams.
On the night of April 16th, the Union Navy made its run past Vicksburg. 8 gunboats and 3 empty troop boats floated down the dark river. Their engines were silent. The Confederates, however, had built fires along the river. They saw the Union boats and began to shoot. They hit most of the boats, but destroyed only one. The damaged boats reached safety below the city. On the last day of April, the Union troop boats began carrying soldiers to the east side of the river. About 23,000 men crossed. Right away, they faced a force of 8,000 Confederate soldiers. They drove the Confederates back.
Grant then ordered the rest of his army to cross to the east side of the river. Some of his officers protested. They said it would be impossible to get supplies to a large army east of the river. Grant was not worried about supplies. He said the men should bring only coffee, hard bread, and salt. Anything else could be taken from the farmers of Mississippi. Their homes, he said, were full of food.
Grant decided not to throw his men against the strong defenses around Vicksburg immediately. Instead, he marched them east toward Jackson, the state capital. Jackson was the supply base for the Confederate Army defending Vicksburg. Grant wanted to cut the supply lines between the two cities. He also wanted to prevent the soldiers in Jackson from joining the soldiers in Vicksburg. Grant captured Jackson easily. He left some troops to destroy enemy supplies. He took the remaining troops and turned back toward Vicksburg.
Grant attacked Vicksburg several times. Each time, his troops were thrown back. The city's defenses were too strong. Grant then decided to surround the city and wait until its food was gone. That, he thought, would make the Confederates surrender. Grant closed in with men and artillery. As one soldier wrote, "The circle of Union forces around the city was so tight that a cat could not have crept out without being discovered. Nothing could get out. Nothing could get in." Weeks passed. The Union army shelled the city. The Confederate army answered from time to time. Food supplies dropped. There was little to eat except cornbread and the meat of mules. Some people caught rats and ate them.
Finally, the Confederate commander, General John Pemberton, decided the situation was hopeless. He sent word to Grant that he was ready to discuss surrender. The two commanders met under a white flag of truce. Grant demanded unconditional surrender. Pemberton rejected the demand. Pemberton's men were to be prisoners. That was a fact. But Pemberton wanted them released immediately on parole. He told Grant that his men would promise to stay out of the war if permitted to return to their homes. If not, he said, they would continue to fight.
Grant agreed to let the Confederate soldiers go home. He and Pemberton signed the surrender agreement on July 4th. The siege of Vicksburg had lasted 47 days. Never had a Union army won such a victory. Grant had taken 30,000 Confederate soldiers out of the war. He had captured 60,000 guns and 170 cannon. These were serious losses for the Confederacy. It already was low on manpower and weapons, but an even greater loss was the control of the Mississippi River. With Vicksburg in Union hands, the North could control the whole length of the river, and the Confederacy was split badly.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.